All your armies, all your fighters, all your tanks, and all your soldiers against the boy holding a stone, standing there all alone. In his eyes, I see the sun. In his smile, I see the moon. And I only wonder, who is weak and who is strong? Who is right and who is wrong? And I only wish that the truth has a tongue.
An ambulance carrying a Gaza patient and heading for the northern Gaza-Israel borderline is often denied crossing into Israeli occupation hospitals. When it changes route towards the southern Gaza border crossings, once again, it's denied entry.
There's no doubt the continued Israeli siege of Gaza has impacted all aspects of life in the territory. One of the most affected is the health sector. Many people, including women, children, and the elderly, are being denied the basic rights to live.
Gaza's border crossings are numbered 7, and the majority of them are controlled by the Israeli occupation authorities. Only the Rafah crossing terminal is controlled by Egypt. The Rafah crossing in southern Gaza and Beit Hanun, Eretz crossing in the north of the territory, are the main outlets abroad for the besieged Gaza residents.
Those who get out of Gaza are patients with life-threatening conditions. Many of them die and become victims of the Israeli blockade. They die before they're allowed to leave the Gaza Strip. Throughout the past 1,000 days of siege, more than 500 patients have lost their lives.
Those who are mostly affected by the Israeli siege are Gaza patients. On their way to treatment outside of the coastal region, they endure a great deal of suffering. Physical and psychological. Such suffering is mainly caused by Israeli travel restrictions, including denial of exit permits. In addition, Israeli prevention of entry of medicines into Gaza has threatened the lives of many of such patients.
The term cancer conjures up pain and grief in the mind of people around the world. In the Gaza Strip, it's associated with certain death simply because cancer patients in Gaza are mostly left to die.
Gaza The stories of those denied travel are numerous. Some of them have died while waiting for an exit permit. Others will likely end with the same fate. Nafisa Ashour, 55, of Khan Yunis refugee camp, has been plagued by a horrible disease. Hassan Shafir, Nafisa's brother, says that his sister has breast cancer that's led to the removal of her breast, causing her to suffer from severe pains.
We found spots on her skin, so we took her to Dr. Khalil Hamdan, a skin cancer specialist. Immediately after examining her, the doctor started treatment. But eventually he concluded her breast had to be removed. Her pains grow more severe, and so she needed more chemotherapy sessions.
The same goes for Samira Salama, who lays at a local hospital awaiting for an exit permit into a Palestinian hospital in the West Bank city of Ramallah.
Once I was bathing and surprised to notice a small spot on my skin. I went directly to Dr. Khalil, and in 2007 he performed a surgery on me. Recently the same condition reappeared. The same doctor referred me to treatment outside of Gaza. Yet I have not been able to exit because the Israeli occupation forces have refused to grant me a permit.
Nafisa Ashour used to get her painkillers from the stores of Gaza-based health ministry. But once the medicine is not available, her physical, mental health conditions worsen. She is considered to be one of those Gaza patients whose conditions have deteriorated due to the unavailability of needed drugs, caused mainly by the tight Israeli closure of the Gaza border crossings. The tight siege has made it impossible to transfer medicine either from the West Bank-based health ministry or from abroad in the form of assistance.
Definitely, there are many drugs that are still lacking in the territory. Some of them are for cancer treatment. Recently, there has been some advances in cancer treatment worldwide, including chemotherapy itself. So I'm supposed to have that medication to be able to give care to my patients. Yet, because of the Israeli blockade, such drugs are not found in Gaza.
Hassan went on to saying, "For 6 months, my sister has been fighting with her disease, while the Israeli occupation has been insisting to not allow entry of medicine or denying her an exit permit to get medical treatment outside of Gaza. Yet she has not despaired, so she's appealed to brothers to allow her to exit."
Looking at her reeling pains in the last 2 months was torture for me. She'd scream from pain all night long, and every time I'd calm her down by helping her walk a bit. She repeatedly appealed to the Egyptian government to let her out of Gaza for treatment. But she died waiting for permission to cross out of Gaza for treatment.
Yet Nafisa passed away just before the Rafah crossing terminal controlled by Egypt was reopened. At a local hospital, Samira Salama lays under life-threatening condition unless she is allowed to exit or gets the needed medicine.
I have increasingly been suffering from pains, and each time I see the doctor, he gives me painkillers, but in vain. The pains have worsened progressively each day, and I increasingly feel that I need more than painkillers. I need to travel abroad again for treatment.
The second story is that of Neda, 22, from the northern Gaza town of Beit Hanun.
I loved her and asked my mother to ask for her hand for me. We agreed to go over to that place and meet her family in a couple of days.
I have talked to Neda, and she didn't object to Haytham, saying that Haytham is a good wise cousin of her. Then the two were engaged formally.
Having been in love with Haytham, Neda and Haytham agreed to get married as soon as possible.
We both had big dreams. I hoped to graduate from university and start working as a school teacher, and Neda hoped the same. She also dreamed of having children, 3 sons and 3 daughters.
They set the date for their wedding party, but one day, Neda started complaining about some sort of pain.
I was so happy, but it was short-lived. She wasn't feeling at all well. I asked her if there was something wrong, and she said she'd found some spots on her skin.
Her fiancé took her to a nearby clinic for blood tests. They found that her hemoglobin levels were terribly low, about 6 degrees. They then referred her to a local hospital in the town of Beit Hanun, where they could provide a transfusion of 3 units of blood.
Despite all diagnostic tests that proved negative, Neda continued to feel the same pain inside her as she prepared for her wedding party due in 10 days. The doctors assured her and advised her to keep up preparing.
Two weeks later, they carried the results of her medical checks to the doctor, who confirmed that she had no major health complications and that her blood level had improved. I told the doctor that my daughter was about to get married and wondered whether I could pair her for her wedding night. The doctor assured me and encouraged me to do so.
Suddenly, some red spots appeared on Neda's skin, making her concerned about her condition. She informed her family about the new symptoms on her body.
While I was preparing her, mainly on the last day, my daughter felt tired and told me she was dizzy and unable to stand and that her vision was terrible. The next day, I took her to a nearby clinic for checks. At the lab, they took a sample of her blood for tests.
As tests were being made for such red spots, Neda's condition was getting worse.
One week later, my fiancé's right eye began to become rather reddish like blood, and she became unable to stand up and kept in bed for prolonged hours, while her body temperature got much higher than normal. We tried to cool the temperature down using ice and cold water, but in vain. The body temperature remained the same.
Two weeks later, the tests proved that Neda had cancer.
Afterwards, results of her blood test returned, and I asked the doctor what she was suffering from. The doctor replied, "No need to worry. Your daughter needs a treatment that is only available outside of Gaza." After I insisted on knowing more details, the doctor said, "Frankly, your daughter suffers from skin trauma."
one of the most pressing problems that cancer patients in Gaza encounter is the lack of some medicines. Sometimes the drugs are made available, but all too late. In cases of skin cancer, Gaza doctors refer patients to treatment outside of the coastal enclave. Neda was awaiting an exit permit through the Beit Hanun crossing in northern Gaza after doctors had referred her to treatment abroad.
Of course, as you know, referral of patients to Israel is quite difficult nowadays, as there are many obstacles ahead, including the Israeli siege of Gaza. Therefore, coordination with the Israelis take a long time.
As her access through the border crossing was delayed, Neda was placed under special observation at the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City.
At the hospital where she was staying, the doctor moved her from the gastroenterology department to the hematology department in a separate room. 10 minutes later, she asked me to help her go to the toilet. In the bathroom, she fainted, so a nurse took her back to her room where she fell into a coma.
While she was laying at the hospital, Neda was concerned for two things: her upcoming wedding party and her despair due to her inability to get the needed treatment.
I noticed that her feet had turned blue and immediately informed the nurse. They performed a CT scan and found that she was suffering a brain hemorrhage. Her father then came to see her and sat near her, reciting some verses from the Quran. She looked at her father while reciting. Then she smiled and her soul ascended to the heavens. She died.
Someone called me and told me that referral papers for Neda Al-Basyuni are available for pickup now. I told the caller. Another referral reached me right before yours. He wondered what referral. I answered him. Neda passed away. Thanks God.
Neda passed away, leaving her beloved family in grief. And her wishes for a normal married life were buried along with her.
May she rest in peace. She was the closest daughter to me. She was not too shy of asking me anything she wanted. Also, she used to talk with me about her own problems. What to say? May she rest in peace.
I always remember her. I relive the time when she was alive. Those were sweet days, sometimes joyous and sometimes sad. The sweet days were more than the sad ones. She didn't hate anyone. If we happened to have a quarrel, she'd immediately try and reconcile.
The third and last story is that of a little baby, aged 1 year and a half. Since he was born, Ibrahim has been suffering from a cardiac complication, and his case can only be treated outside of the Gaza Strip.
We had some cases of cardiac deformation, but the occupation has approved the referral of one case only.
My son's surgery took place Monday at Israel's Tal HaShamir Hospital, and thank God it was very successful. The doctors there advise us to feed him with Materna milk powder. When we returned to Gaza, I visited every store to find that milk type, but didn't find any.
My son Ibrahim used to drink Materna milk powder, but due to the siege, such milk stopped being available in the local market. Consequently, I had to feed him with an alternative milk, the UNRWA-provided powdered milk. When my son drank it, he started to vomit and had diarrhea repeatedly.
Once his condition got worse, for he was given improper milk, and so he was transferred to the local hospital of Al Nasser.
They told me that my son was suffering from diarrhea-related dehydration and needed to be put on an IV. They took my son to a room where they injected him. The ambulance then came and took us to a vascular specialist in Al-Shifa Hospital. The doctor found that three of my son's arteries had perforated. He suggested that we either amputate his arm or refer him immediately to an Israeli hospital due to the lack of equipment at the hospital needed for the surgery.
As his condition was deteriorating, doctors referred him to an Israeli occupation hospital inside the Green Line.
The doctor phoned the Israelis and told them that my son Ibrahim was in a life-threatening condition. He appealed to them to do whatever they could to save my son's life.
His father could obtain the needed exit permit, but neither the father nor the child could cross the Beit Hanun crossing in northern Gaza in due time, as Ibrahim was supposed to undergo surgery.
They produced the needed papers for the transfer. It was an urgent one, and I called up the director for coordination. But by then, crossing had been closed, so I called up the coordination officer again. But the crossing remained shut. Every passing minute was so critical for my son's life. I was asked to wait for half an hour so maybe the crossing would be opened up. The Israelis had knowledge of my son's very critical condition. But all of a sudden, they opened fire on us and turned me and my dying son away. Ibrahim's temperature had risen to 39 degrees. We returned to the children's hospital in Gaza, and the coordination officer there advised me to go back to the crossing the next day as early as 8 in the morning.
In the next day, Ibrahim's father carried his son and headed again for the Beit Hanun Eretz crossing, and this time, they were both allowed to cross.
When I entered the Eretz crossing, the Israelis there shouted at me with loudspeakers, "Put the boy down." I told them my son was critically ill and urgently needed to cross for treatment. Again, they said, "Put him down and unzip your trousers, take off your watch and open your briefcase." Then they ordered me to go through an electromagnetic room while my son was sitting on the floor, crying and fighting with his pains.
Following inspections by the Israeli authorities, Ibrahim was transferred by an ambulance en route to the Israeli hospital. On their way to the hospital, Ibrahim passed away.
I took a taxi cab and the driver asked me, "Where are you heading?" I replied to Yachluf Hospital. Then he asked me to pay him 600 new Israeli shekels. I agreed, but soon after, Ibrahim died on the road to Ashkelon, about 12 kilometers away from Gaza.
He died on the way to the hospital, while Neda passed away while laying on the hospital bed. And Nafisa couldn't cross through the Rafah crossing terminal the day it was reopened widely, right after the January 2009 Israeli war on Gaza.